This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
That's how the enemy is planning to finish the ANC. You just come tomorrow and say, Makhashule was involved in this and therefore I must step aside. I will never do that. I will never.
That's the Secretary General of South Africa's ruling African National Congress saying the accusation that he is heavily involved in corruption are part of a conspiracy against the party. Details coming up also. Mali's quick return to civilian rule is at the top of the agenda as West African leaders meet today. And the U.S. Special Envoy to the Sahel is in France to discuss strategies for the strife-torn region. All these and more ahead on African News Tonight. But first, our top story. West African leaders are meeting today with their agenda being a quick return to civilian rule in Mali after a military coup. The Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, has held virtual meetings on how to convince the military junta to yield power, but this is their first face-to-face meeting in person in 6 months. ECOWAS has told the military leaders it wants a one-year transition to democratic rule and no members of the junta should lead the transition. During a meeting over the weekend, the junta and leaders of the M5 protest movement said they want a transition process of 18 months, down from the 3 years initially proposed by the military, but who should head it is still a point of discussion. The meeting also was expected to discuss Africa's response to COVID-19, ECOWAS single currency, and economic monetary union. Meanwhile, an advisor to deposed President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita says he left yesterday for medical treatment in Abu Dhabi, according to Reuters. Keita, 75, was hospitalized last Tuesday. The U.S. Special Envoy for the Sahel region, Dr. J. Peter Pham, is currently in France before heading to the Sahel region, where he will have meetings until next week. Nicolas Pinot reports from Paris.
The American diplomat arrived in France, where he will stay until Wednesday. The Special Envoy, Pham, is scheduled to meet with French officials to discuss events in Mali and ways to advance support of regional efforts to address of insecurity, contain the spread of violence, and stabilize the region, according to the agenda released by the State Department. Remember that Washington suspended military aid to Mali after the coup in Bamako. In addition, Pham will underscore the U.S. partnership with both Mauritania and Niger. He plans to discuss with government officials, civil society, and others to explore ways the U.S. can work with partners to prevent and address allegations of human rights violations in the Sahel, strengthen civic space, and discuss preparations for upcoming West African elections. In Niamey, the U.S. envoy will meet with Nigerian officials to discuss both the U.S.-Niger partnership and their roles as both the rotating presidency of ECOWAS and the presidency of the United Nations Security Council for September. Nicolas Pinault, VOA, Paris.
Morocco is hosting political talks between a handful of Libyan leaders from both rival governments. The talks bring together five members of the Tripoli-based Government of National Accord, GNA, and five from a parliament headquartered in the eastern Libyan city of Tobruk. Moroccan Foreign Minister Nasser Bourita said before the meeting got underway that his country is offering the Libyans space to discuss points of contention dividing them. Libya has endured almost a decade of violent chaos since the 2011 NATO-backed uprising that toppled and killed dictator Muammar Gaddafi. The crisis worsened last year when military strongman Khalifa Haftar, who backs the Tobruk parliament and is supported by Egypt, the UAE, and Russia, launched an offensive to seize the capital Tripoli from the GNA. Haftar was beaten back earlier this year by Turkish-backed GNA forces. On August 22nd, the rival administrations of Libya announced separately that they would cease all hostilities and hold nationwide elections, drawing praise from world powers. At the January summit in Berlin, the main countries involved in the Libyan conflict agreed to respect an arms embargo and to stop interfering in Libya's domestic affairs. In South Africa, new doubt is being cast on President Cyril Ramaphosa's apparent renewed drive to end corruption within his party. The leader is adamant that law enforcement agencies will soon make several arrests. Some of Ramaphosa's high-level African National Congress colleagues have been accused of graft involving millions of dollars related to the supply of COVID-19 medical equipment. Darren Taylor has this report from Johannesburg.
The voices daring the president to follow his talk with action are ringing loud and clear. Here's the leader of the official opposition party, the Democratic Alliance, John Steenhuisen, in Parliament recently.
The fish rots from the head. And if you're serious about fighting corruption, you should start by putting senior government ministers and Mr. Ace Magashule, as well as others implicated, in jail.
Magashule, the ANC Secretary General, is one of the party's most powerful figures. He's also, however, often linked to grand corruption. Magashule has told the state broadcaster the claims against him are part of a wider political plot against the ruling party.
That's how the enemy is planning to finish the ANC. You just come tomorrow and say, Magashule was involved in this and therefore I must step aside. I will never do that. I will never.
But this is exactly what he'll be expected to do if the ANC's Integrity Commission finds evidence against him. So pressure is mounting on Magashule from outside as well as inside his party, and it's clear he's a worried man.
A member of the ANC is entitled to be treated like a citizen. Fairness, the rule of law, the law of natural justice is what you and I expect.
Steenhuisen believes high-ranking ANC officials like Magashule will never be prosecuted for corruption, because to do so, he told Ramaphosa in Parliament, would destroy the ANC.
This is a systemic problem within the ANC, and it's why your party is pathologically incapable of self-correction.
Frans Cronier of the Center for Risk Analysis says the first sign of Ramaphosa wavering is his referral of claims of graft to the ANC's Integrity Commission.
Corruption should be investigated by law enforcement agencies and not by internal party committees.
He says the second obstacle to a sincere ANC campaign against graft is that so many of the party's top 80 members are themselves implicated in financial crimes.
We've dug into that in some detail. And 41 of those are people that would appear to be implicated in gross acts of corruption. 8 of that 80, we confidently say, are not implicated at all, perfectly clean.
So Cronier says a real attempt to rid the ANC of its corrupt elements would decimate its top ranks and potentially end its ability to win elections. His fellow analyst, David Ansara, doubts whether a credible investigation of political corruption is even possible in South Africa.
And we've also seen, in terms of the prosecuting authority, serious problems there in terms of capacity, in terms of staff, resources, and the ability to pursue corruption charges.
Ansara's view is that the best citizens can hope for is that a few corrupt ANC leaders are eventually imprisoned, and not only the relatively minor party figures who appear to be involved in one of post-democratic South Africa's most heinous graft scandals. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Here's a recap of our top stories. Mali's quick return to civilian rule is at the front of the agenda as West African leaders meet today. The U.S. Special Envoy to the Sahel is in France to discuss strategies for the strife-torn region. And Morocco is hosting political talks for Libyan leaders from both rival governments. Thanks for listening to VOA Africa. And for more news and information, visit our website at voanews.com. The first ever South Africa nature documentary to air as a Netflix original is winning international acclaim. My Octopus Teacher is the story of a man who befriends a small octopus in the icy Atlantic Ocean off the coast of Cape Town. From there, reporter Vicky Stark spoke to protagonist Craig Foster and director Pippa Erlich.
This tenderly told story has already won a prestigious award and been nominated for a slew of others. It took Foster almost a decade to make. He says he was burnt out after working on a number of big films when he decided to start free diving without an oxygen tank or wetsuit in the area where he'd grown up. He became inspired to start teaching himself something he'd seen San master trackers do on land in the central Kalahari 20 years prior.
These extraordinary men were just so close to nature, and they were so good at tracking and understanding the natural system that I was deeply envious of their abilities. I just wanted to get a little bit of that in myself. So I just started swimming just to try and get my energy back. And then I had this idea, could I ever track animals underwater? And over a period of 4 years diving every day, I actually was able to teach myself to track animals underwater. And it was a very exciting, empowering process. And that enabled me to get into the secret world of some of these special animals.
In the film, we see him diving every day to visit an octopus who is wary at first, then reaches out to him with one tentacle and eventually trusts him enough to sit on his chest and let him stroke her.
She taught me humility. She taught me compassion. She opened my mind to just how precious wild creatures are, and each animal's life is so complex. It's quite incredible. I think this is an animal that's separated in evolution by hundreds of millions of years, and it's a mollusk, essentially a snail without a shell. But she's got a huge mind and a huge curiosity and a tremendous intelligence. So it came as a shock, and that's why I called her my teacher, because I just did learn so much from her.
Foster, who's also the co-founder of an NGO called the Sea Change Project, says this moving tale has a message for mankind.
We are totally reliant on the natural world as our life support system. It keeps us breathing, it keeps us feeding, and it's easy to forget that in this industrial world of running around and trying to survive. So it's absolutely critical that we reconnect with nature, no matter where we are, and seriously get together to think about how we can regenerate the very system that is keeping us alive.
While Foster eventually had a big team, initially he and environmental journalist Pippa Erlich worked alone for a few years. It was her first movie, and she directed, wrote, filmed, and edited. Erlich says they hope their work will create awareness about the octopus's home. The Great African Sea Forest stretches for 1,300 kilometers along South Africa and Namibia's coastlines.
In the last few decades, mostly due to climate change, 40% of our world's kelp forests have declined, and some of them have disappeared completely. And unlike coral bleaching, for example, it's not something that's getting a lot of attention, and it's not something that people seem particularly aware of. In fact, a lot of people don't even know that there is such a thing as an underwater forest.
Erlich, who gave up a great job diving to film sharks all over the world to work on this movie, which at the time had no funding, says they've been completely overwhelmed by the response it's received.
We've been nominated at Jackson Wild, which is a major nature film festival. We've been nominated at the Wild Screen Panda Awards, which is probably the biggest natural history filmmaking festival on Earth. So for Jackson Wild, we have 8 nominations. At Wild Screen, we have 2. There's some smaller festivals like the Green Screen Festival in Germany, which we've been nominated for 6 awards in. And we were really, really excited earlier this year to win the best feature at the EarthX Impact Film Festival.
Netflix began airing My Octopus Teacher today. This is Vicky Stark for Voice of America News in Cape Town.
Some churches in Mozambique say they are opposed to plans by the government to revise religious laws in the country. The churches argue that such a move will affect freedom of worship and membership in churches. Pastor Fernando Chauki is the leader of the ecclesiastic churches opposed to the revision of religious laws. He told reporter Mike Mbonye that Mozambique's constitution permits all religious groups to manifest their faith.
First of all, I would like to say that to revise religious freedom law is not the government original plan. But this is a plan of some religious leaders who try to put restrictions on the new emerging churches in the country because they find themselves losing some members in favor of the new churches. Consequently, they seek in the government a way to stop the emerging of new churches. However, we understand this has a natural process whereby in the process of time, it may be possible that people no longer identify themselves with a certain church and as a result, they change to another church. It's the same thing, for instance, when people move from one football team to another. Secondly, this is a plan of some organizations who happen to be partners of the state of Mozambique that, motivated by their unbelief, wants to see Mozambique without religious freedom. Reason why we advise the government not to accept this suggestion of law, because when faith is hurt, people no longer fight to preserve their lives, but to preserve their faith, because faith will never bow. That would be the sad scenario for Mozambique.
In the alternative, what suggestions or options should be done to ensure equity among religious groups?
I would not think that there is a need to suggest the government a law to ensure equity between religious groups, because Mozambique is a secular state and secularity is a great achievement which allows that any religious group have the freedom to manifest their faith even when their faith is different from the faith of others. In the constitution of Mozambique, all religious groups enjoy the same liberties.
What has been the fate of the church since COVID-19 lockdown in Mozambique?
Now that we are in the COVID-19, the church as a spiritual entity is not in a lockdown at all. It's not shut. Despite the fact that the places of worship are shut, therefore the church is fulfilling her role in many ways. For instance, helping those in need, and praying that God will free Mozambique from this pandemic. We are also using all the platforms and all ways to sensitize people, to adopt all the advice from the health department so that we may not spread and continue spread the COVID-19. We are also praying that God will breed a new wave for Mozambique, because this moment we are living in, every area of society has been affected by this pandemic. We are praying because the economy is being affected, the church also is being affected, all our societies are being affected by this pandemic. So as the church, as a spiritual entity, we continue to pray, we continue to help people, we continue to sensitize people to avoid actions that are going to promote the spread of the COVID-19.
Marriage in this socially distant times, even the ceremony itself, can't always bring couples and their families together. In Africa, some digitally savvy couples are finding virtual workarounds to get them to the altar, including weddings where the bride and groom are thousands of kilometers apart. VOA's Anita Powell spoke to one such African couple who recently solidified their bond while in two different countries and brings us this story of love, longing and celebration from Johannesburg.
Fifi and Emmanuel Agwebu got married last month. But in these difficult times of coronavirus restrictions on travel, they resorted to a modern solution. They did it virtually. She was in Nigeria's southeastern Enugu state, dancing herself down the aisle for their traditional Nigerian wedding. And he was in Johannesburg, South Africa's economic hub, where he works as a musician, watching it all online. The bride says her special day was no less special despite the absence of the groom.
On that day, he was like online and we were talking every second. So I didn't feel like he wasn't around. I actually felt he was with me, like he was with me. Really, just that he wasn't there present, you know. So it was just, I'm sure people will be wondering, why is this girl dancing and laughing and having fun? I just felt he was there, really. Like, it wasn't any different to me, really. So I didn't feel indifferent. I felt good.
Agwebu notes that a close friend of hers did the same recently, virtually marrying with the groom in England and the bride in Nigeria. They're among the countless couples across the world kept apart by the pandemic. But even those who are together can't celebrate in a traditional way because of pandemic restrictions on large crowds. It's crashed the business of Johannesburg party supplier Malebohang Gulwako. She supplies weddings and engagement parties with champagne walls, transparent shelves of filled glasses in front of an ornate wall. Gulwako, herself a newlywed, says it may take some cultures on this side of the world a while to accept virtual celebrations.
It's going to take a very long time, Remember, we also grew up in big families. We always had people, at least a minimum of 7 people around you for your 7th, 8th, 15th and 21st birthday and so forth. So it's going to be very hard to unlearn celebrating on your own. I'm not sure about the Western culture because maybe you can just do a dinner with like one other person and that's okay. But that's not us. That's not me.
While some couples are delaying their weddings until COVID-19 restrictions are lifted, the Agwebus didn't want to wait to declare their love and commitment.
I felt bad that I couldn't make it there in person. At the same time, when I saw her dance, happily smiling, kind of gave me confidence, all the confidence I needed, and like, okay, she's happy. So at least that's something to hold on to.
The Agwebus plan to reunite in South Africa when flights resume. For now, these two, and countless others, will have to have and hold each other virtually. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suwohid in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.